This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu. And if you're listening to previous shows, you'd realize there's a sudden surge of security topics on the show recently. And it's never going to stop. In fact, cyber criminals are becoming smarter and working more like an organization instead of just a bunch of guys sitting in a dark room. The threat is real and we shouldn't stop talking about it. And here with me today is Alan C. He's the co-founder and also the CEO of Firmus. It's an info security service provider here in Malaysia. And we're going to be talking about the threats, the risk and also the compliance within the industry. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the current threats that we saw in 2016. What happened here in Malaysia in terms of the cybersecurity industry itself?
I think in general, this year, we have seen the emerge of the new threats to the market, you know, such as ransomware. And of course, hacktivism is always there. And mobile security is one of the issue as well, because more and more people are leveraging on a mobile for their transaction, for their day-to-day work. And phishing is it has been there for long, but again, you know, it continued to be there. And of course, insider threats.
Hacktivism, what's that about?
Hacktivism actually covered most of the terminology that I mentioned just now. It's basically, you know, hackers trying to infiltrate into your system, hack into your system unauthorizedly. You know, so it cover actually insider threats, it cover ransomware. It is part of the hacktivism activities.
And one of the big buzzwords when we entered 2016 was, you know, ransomware. We should be aware of ransomware because there are more connected devices. Our mobile phones carry so many confidential information. Was this something that really, you know, exploded here in Malaysia in 2016?
Well, actually it is. Ransomware by itself, the name implies that it's a malware contained with the objective to ask for a ransom. And typically, we have observed, you know, two types of ransomware has been at large and also affecting the local industry. You know, one is the crypto locker, which will actually encrypt your files. And then, you know, unless you pay certain ransom through Bitcoin, then you'll be decrypted. They'll provide you a key. And the other one is called Locky, and it's relatively quite new. And it is spread using the spam, and typically in the forms of email messages that carry a attachment like an invoice. So once you open it, your system will be crippled and then it will be encrypted. And then they will be asking you for ransom.
Where's Malaysia in terms of, you know, where do we rank when it comes to, you know, the amount of threats that we face on a day-to-day basis? In 2016, was this something that it was a huge problem for organizations compared to, you know, regions like we like to compare with Singapore, for
example? Basically, I believe Malaysian is not alone, and this is the worldwide and phenomenon. Basically, everyone are affected. So long you are in e-businesses or e-commerce, you will be affected. So Malaysia is not alone. I believe other countries are the same. But I believe as far as Malaysia is concerned, because of especially our financial sector, Bank Negara has done quite well in terms of regulating the financial sector to actually conform to certain internet security requirements. Thus, so far, we have been doing quite well in the area as compared with other countries where their regulation is actually not that strict. In fact, Bank Negara has done very well for that.
And the digital world doesn't quite understand nation in that sense. It's a flat world. It's everyone is in one nation. When you go onto the digital world, it's completely different. It doesn't matter where you come from. Mm-hmm. Once you're on there, you are at risk.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk a bit about Firmus. How did it came about? What's your nature of business then?
What we are doing is actually we are involving in the cybersecurity consulting and also technology. As far as we are concerned, you know, we are one of the certified pen testing company. Pen testing means penetration testing company. That, you know, a company where you engage us to actually do the security audit, or so-called vulnerability assessment, into customers' network from a web application perspective, from mobile application perspective, and also probably from a network perspective. So overall, our function is to do ethical hacking, that we will discover the vulnerability of a client's network. And hence, at the same time, we are also proposing them the ways and the methodology of how do they patch the system accordingly so that, you know, their system are secure.
And what's the sense in 2016? Was it a lot of, you know, you going up to clients or customers and, you know, creating the awareness and talking to them? Or was it the other way around where, you know, they come up to you because, you know, it was such a big thing, it was such a big topic?
I think I've been in business for past 15 to 20 years in info security and now return as cyber security. For the past 5 to 10 years, I would think a lot of time customer need to be educated about why the needs for security assessment. For last year, or even this year itself, 2016, we see a lot of inquiry coming in, even through my website, you know, and people are asking for, give me a quotation for penetration testing. So that means markets start to realize. And in fact, for the past 10 years, this kind of penetration testing services is not new in the financial sector. And because of bank account requirement, that they require the party to do actually the pen test onto their network. And that's why, you know, every year we have been invited to do the jobs. But again, you know, it doesn't apply to some corporation. Even some corporation could be very big. But lately, we have seen that a lot of inquiry coming in, just ask for a quotation. And we know that, you know, markets start to realize that there's a need and that there's a requirement to do this because they need to assess their risk in the network.
Do they do this, you know, like they send in your email and asking for quotation only because, you know, it is a compliance that they need to sort of implement? Or is it because they themselves understand the awareness and they understand the risk, hence they're coming up to you instead of just asking how much to do this and if you know, yeah, the price is right, all right, do this for me, and, you know, they wipe their hands clean?
Actually, it's two types. A lot of organizations, they started to have a cyber risk department or cyber security department and compliance department. And they knew there's a risk and they need to engage the party to do. Of course, a lot of time in Malaysian company, as far as Malaysian company is concerned, they are very much driven by compliance. Without compliance, they are not going to do it. Because of authority, you know, push down the new guideline and compliances, they have to comply to it. But I'm glad to see a lot of organizations actually taking the initiative to actually do it themselves because of internal, they have a internal compliance team.
You also mentioned phishing was one of the things that happened in 2016. And it's one of the things that's been happening for so long already. Any case studies or any examples you could share of, like, you know, why these things are still happening? Is it because these phishing emails are just getting a lot more smarter nowadays?
Phishing is not new, but again, you know, the law average of those phishing scam is basically they are going on the large volume of the recipient, which means if I today I blast out 1 million of phish email out, I would expect 1 or 2% responded to it, that is good enough. And in this world, even though bank or authority like Bank Negara has already sent out numerous advice or even warning about please do not trust any email asking you to change your password, you know, due to system maintenance. But again, you know, there are still people fall into these traps, you know. And of course, over the years, the number of phishing scam is getting smarter. You know, those days, you probably need to click on it and then you need to key in something. Then only you will actually fall into the traps by keying your password. But nowadays, look at that. You know, a lot of time, instead of you keying information, the moment you click the link, the Trojan will be downloaded to your notebook, even though without you keying any information on that. Mm. So with the Trojan, basically, they are listening to whatever transaction you're doing and then send it back to the host.
I'm speaking to Alan C., the co-founder and also the CEO of Firmus. And when we come back in just a moment, we'll talk about what we did right in 2016 and what we didn't quite do right the same year as well. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Build financial mountains. BFM 89.9.
This is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandu and I'm speaking to Alan C. He's the co-founder and also the CEO of Firmus. It's an info security service provider here in Malaysia. And early on, Alan, we were talking about some examples of what happened in 2016. So what did we do right in 2016 and what we didn't do not so right in 2016?
In fact, if you go through the past, then you see that, you know, there are a few things that we need to take note is cyber criminals are becoming more well-organized compared with before. So that, you know, people are doing it with an objective, you know, with monetary objective in mind. And nowadays, why the awareness is more and more because there are more people reported the case compared with before. I noticed that there are still many organizations do not take cybersecurity risk seriously. They still think that, you know, cybersecurity is a form of expenditures. You know, investment in cybersecurity is a form of expenditures. Too often, they are asking the CIO or IT head or security head to actually work out an ROI about the investment, which to me, it should be part of the cost of the businesses. It shouldn't have any ROI.
Is this a completely wrong approach then?
It's a wrong approach. Imagine today you're living in a gated and guarded community. Basically, you're paying higher fees for security because you care about your family life, you care about your asset, you care about your peacefulness. But again, you know, it should apply to the cybersecurity as well because, to be frank, there's no ROI. Mm. And it should be treated as part of the business operation costs. And too often also, a lot of cyber attack also being carried out by insider threats, you know, which is also beyond the control.
Perhaps you could define a bit insider threat then.
Insider threat, it could be, you know, someone working with you and someone will hire them as an espionage to actually steal information, or someone that are developing some system for you and they purposely leave some trails or some backdoor in the system so that when they leave organization, or even though when they're outside organization, they can actually still log into your system. And someone which could be a disgruntled employee, which you may have upset him a couple of times and then he want to sabotage your system. So all these things are very difficult to control, because while you are having the best security system in place, and then, you know, insider threat is something very difficult to be detected. And of course, there are many ways to do it, to detect it as well. That means first, you must have some very good internal password managing system, because super user in a network is a very powerful user. So you must have a system to take care of the password, you know, and things like that.
You know, there's so many factors, also. There's so many windows that we need to look out for when it comes to the cybersecurity world. How do you go about, like, you know, what's the best way of doing this? Is it, you know, having policies in place or having training in place? Because you can only do so much with training. You can only do so much with policies. You can only do so much with investment into, you know, cybersecurity technology. It all comes down again to us, the humans that are using it, right? How do companies sort of mitigate the risk, or at least lessen their risk of being, you know, attacked in that sense?
If you look at the information security management system, overall, there are three main components. We usually call it 3P approach. First, you need a process. Without processes, you know, even though you have the best firewall, the best security system, the best people, you can't run it. Processes also need to be updated from time to time so that it reflects the current threats, it reflects the current situation. Second thing, you must have a product and technology as well. Human cannot do wonders. To detect the zero-day attack, this is beyond human capabilities. Basically, you need a very good solution like APT solution to take care of that. And to handle DDoS attack, human cannot help as well. You need a very good DDoS mitigation solution. So you need to have a very good technology. But again, even though you have these two, you still have a human factor. And usually, there's a saying that the weakest link in a security is a human. You know, because why? There are so many types of human. And when we do some forms of research, we notice that humans are usually the highest risk. Give example. One of the typical examples is that people usually fall into the spear phishing attack. And to stop this kind of spear phishing attack require us to build a very, very strong defense around the people. That in turn required an understanding of why people fall victim onto those type of attack. We have done a lot of research, and recently we also done some research on how psychology of people who uses the computer and to develop how they actually react to this kind of spear phishing attack when they are online. And we come to a conclusion that basically two factors. One factor appears to be the people naturally seek what is called as cognitive efficiency. You know, it's maximal information of minimal brain effort. And as a result, they take mental shortcut that they are triggered by logos, brand name, or even a simple phrases like "send from my iPhone." Mm-hmm. That, you know, Fisher usually include in their messages, you know. When they see this trigger, especially the bank logo, then they will take things lightly. And they will always assume that this is safe and I trust them. And then they will try to click into it. And second factor is also they always ignore that the habitual way of people use the technology. Many individuals use emails, social media, and texting so often that they eventually do so largely without thinking. And that's very often that, you know, when you use a lot of time, you use Facebook or whichever. So you assume that in people sending you a message through messengers, it should be safe. But nowadays, malware spread through messengers. So these are all kinds of the outcome of the research that we have done in the people, and realize that it happens to anybody. Mm.
And we've seen it with, you know, even chain messages on, you know, on chat messaging apps, and you've seen them, you know, go across for a number of years. It just proves that how we're so easily fooled by something that looks legit, but we're not going through the details of, you know, where it was sent, from whom it was sent, what is the email address that it was sent from. We don't look into those details.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about the cyber risk guideline for management by the Securities Commission to Capital Market. What's this about?
Actually, in 31st of October, you know, 2016, Security Commission has come up a guideline on management of cyber risk. And this cyber risk guideline actually outlined the role and responsibility of the board of directors, role and responsibility of the management towards a cyber risk, and also spell out what are the cyber risk policy and procedure that a company must have, cyber risk measure? How do you measure the risks, you know, that affect your organization, such as operational risk, reputational risk, and also how do you do prevention, detection, and recovery? And I believe this guideline and cyber risk guideline is actually good and healthy for the industry, because too often, beside financial sector that has been guided by GPIS, which has implemented or introduced by Bank Negara more than 10 years ago, many organizations, when a CIO or CISO wanted to do or wanted to invest in cybersecurity technologies or services, too often the board of directors or senior management actually rejected the idea simply because they thought they are not the targeted company. Their risk is not as high as bank. Mm. In fact, it is wrong, because to be frank, nowadays a bank is highly secure. And the only way to attack a bank probably is through the weakest link, which is human. But a lot of organizations out there, they could be even, in terms of size, they could be even bigger than bank. The only difference is that the nature of business could be different. Therefore, they always see the risk factor is lower. In fact, that's not true. So we see very positive for this guideline that was introduced about 1.5 months ago, because it will make the industry more well prepared and more resilient to any potential cyber attack that may attack them, you know, at any time.
But for the financial institution, there is the GPIS from Bank Negara. And how's that coming along so far?
In fact, Bank Negara introduced GPIS in year 2004. I think it's 12 years from now. And over years, they have also improved and improvised the guideline to reflect to the current trends. You know, even though the year before, last year, last August, they come out with a latest edition for it, you know, to address issue like the APT, you know, because it's ransomware is getting serious. And this kind of guideline wasn't appear in the GPIS before. So they put in an addendum to add on it. Mm. So APT is one of them, you know, even though they also wanted the FI to actually invest in some security monitoring solution so that they can actually monitor the security threats. They also want them to do DLP, data loss prevention, because they're under PDPA and information of their client not supposed to be hacked. Say for instance, today, if your credit card is being hacked and under PDPA, you have a right to sue a bank so that this is their risk as well. So that to safeguard all those data being leaked out, they need to have a good data loss prevention solution. Mm. So this has been added.
All right. So it's an ongoing thing when it comes to the cybersecurity world. And, you know, every year you got to, you know, update and you got to, you know, refresh or you know, do new things or implement new things. And talking about trends that you mentioned earlier on as well, how do you, from firmer's perspective, you look into what's going to happen next? How do you sort of identify, you know, what we should be looking out for? Hence, you know, you come up with, you know, policies and, you know, training methods and so forth. How do you sort of keep in track of knowing, you know, what's going to happen next in that sense?
I think the threat is ever changing and ever evolving. Those threats that we are seeing right now, it will not disappear overnight. So therefore, you know, those technology required, you know, like I mentioned just now, has to be there, and it will continue to be there. And we expect more and more organizations to actually deploy more cybersecurity technology into the network, such as, like, you know, some intrusion prevention solution, you know, data loss prevention solution. If you observe this year, overall, you know, the threats like, you know, mobile security, ransomware, they will still be there and they will not just disappear. But of course, in terms of the trend that we know that coming in the coming years, and more manufacturer of your day-to-day household electrical goods, you know, will be incorporated with IoT features. And this also have opened up another good marketing opportunity for those manufacturers, because geographically, they will know where are their users. They also roughly will collect a lot of big data to analyze it, how the user use electrical goods, and demographically, they know who are the users, and then they will do more promotion if the area which is not selling very well. But without knowing that, you know, with IoT, a lot of users may not know that it poses a lot of risk, because your day-to-day activity behavior, you know, is made known to the manufacturer. And a lot of time, this IoT manufacturer, they do not take security seriously. Hence, their devices, you know, will become a botnet for any potential DDoS attack to a countries or to organizations.
The next time we buy, you know, a home appliance, we got to ask about security, because it's not something that we used to ask about microwaves or fridges. You know, it's like, how secure is my fridge? It's not a question anymore. Now it probably is. It's going to be one of those things where you need to know, you need to ask.
Exactly. And you also know, how do you control this thing? Because, you know, it cannot be by default. If it's by default, you're unsure how did they set the password in this IoT. And you must also understand how this IoT send out the information back to the manufacturer, because it may actually infringe your privacy that you do not want people to know. How do I wash my clothes? What time do I wash my clothes? And how much load I put each time to wash my clothes. Technology bring more convenience to the users, but again, you know, it's susceptible to more risk to the users.
And it's the big problem in that sense of finding that balance of making it easy for the customer or for the consumer, but yet still secure. It's finding that balance is really, really difficult.
It's very difficult.
So looking ahead then in 2017, what can businesses expect, or what should they be aware of, and, you know, how can they go around it? What should they do if, you know, they're listening to this and they go like, right, I'm now all ears and I'm ready to, you know, execute a few stuff. What can they do? What should they do?
I think first thing to do is that they need to know where are their risks. Assess their risks. Get an independent partner to actually assess the risk, telling them where their risk is. Whether it's from a network perspective, whether it's from the operational perspective, at least knowing your risk, then you rectify where the risk is. Secondly, you know, you must have a cybersecurity policies. And the policy must reflect the current situation. And I believe many organizations, they could have IT security policies, you know, like password setting, clear desk policy, which could be still useful, but it could be dated. You are unable to reflect the current threats that you're facing. So have a very good security policy is a basic fundamental for organization. And even though when you have a policy, it shouldn't be kept in a shelf as an encyclopedia. It shall be made known and channeled down to all the users so that they understand, they are well prepared, and they fully understand what are the policy all about. And they need to sign on it. And from time to time, you need to refresh the policy so that people know. And the thirdly is you have to keep your system updated. Too often, people are too lazy to do a patching. And you know, unpatched system give hackers a good chance to hack too. Why? Because your system are... Why the manufacturer want to ask you to patch a system? Because there are vulnerability in the current version. So if you don't patch, you're giving an opportunity for the hackers to actually hack into your system. And of course, the other one is actually you need to do a lot of security awareness training. People need to be well aware of what is going on out there. Like board of directors, from time to time, they may get some expert to do a security talk so that they understand what are the latest threats to them, and they shouldn't be kept in the dark about what is going on out there. And then employee as well. So doing a good security training for them, and that'll be helpful. And one more thing is on the password. And this is something that, you know, that everyone has been talking for long, and everyone knows how important the password it is, and we need to create a very sophisticated password. But again, people still neglect.
Even our smartphones, a lot of us don't even have a password for
exactly.
Our smartphones, right?
Even though some of our social media founder, you can see that the password could be da-da-da, you know, basically, because why? It's a human. Mm. And when we have multiple systems, creating a password and changing it from time to time is a very tough, daunting task. It's very difficult. So hence, people tend to use one password for the rest of the system. And the worst thing is that a password is unified over the system. Yeah. So this is very important.
So I guess it's no more of a question. I guess a lot of businesses then need to be prepared for the cyber battle. And it's no more a question of like, if I get attacked, it's more of a question of when I get attacked and am I ready for that?
Yep.
As long as we're ready for the attack, that's the good mindset that we should head into 2017. Then.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've been speaking to Alan Sees, the co-founder and also the CEO of Firmus, talking about cyber threats that's happening here in Malaysia and also understanding the best steps forward for your business. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.